Welcome to Base by Base, the podcast of genomic discoveries. Imagine facing a serious health condition that runs in your family, one that could lead to, well, life-threatening complications, like a sudden aortic tear. You know the clinical signs are there, but despite extensive testing, doctors just can't pinpoint the exact genetic cause. You're kind of left in this frustrating diagnostic limbo, just searching for answers. So what if a significant chunk of these mystery cases, you know, those where a clear genetic diagnosis remains elusive, what if they're actually caused by hidden cryptic changes deep within our DNA? Changes that are incredibly subtle and easily missed by even the most advanced standard tests.
That's precisely the heart of it. These cryptic changes, as you call them, are often quite subtle alterations in how our genes are read and processed. Specifically, they impact splicing. Think of splicing as the cell's crucial cutting and pasting mechanism. It transforms the raw genetic code into precise instructions for building proteins. If this process goes awry, well, the resulting protein might be entirely non-functional or even toxic, and that can lead to disease.
And here's where it gets really interesting. This deep dive will reveal how powerful new genomic tools, plus a systematic, deeper approach, are finally uncovering these hidden genetic culprits. It's fundamentally changing how we diagnose and manage conditions like Marfan syndrome, offering hope where there was once only uncertainty. Today, we want to celebrate the groundbreaking work of a large collaborative team. They were led by Susan Walker and Alistair T. Pagnamenta. Their research, spanning numerous UK institutions, including Genomics England and the Universities of Oxford and Exeter, has profoundly advanced our understanding of Marfan syndrome, and crucially, the utility of comprehensive genome sequencing in diagnosing these previously unsolved cases.
Right. So Marfan syndrome, or MFS, affects maybe 2 to 3 in 10,000 individuals. Diagnosis typically happens in the early 20s, often. While it presents with various skeletal and ocular features, the most critical risk is an aneurysm of the thoracic aorta. Without surgical intervention, this can progress to sudden aortic dissection, which, yeah, can be fatal. Clinical diagnosis typically follows what's called the Gint nosology, which is a set of established criteria for identifying the syndrome.
And the genetic basis for MFS has been understood for a while now, hasn't it? It's caused by pathogenic variants in the FBN1 gene. That gene codes for fibrillin-1, a key glycoprotein, really important for the strength and elasticity of our connective tissues. Historically, the common FBN1 variants identified were things like premature protein termination or maybe subtle changes in the protein's building blocks.
Exactly. But despite this general understanding, a significant diagnostic gap has persisted. While our established methods can pick up variants in over 90% of clinically diagnosed MFS cases, a substantial minority remain undiagnosed. Now, these unsolved cases might sometimes be due to subtle or incomplete clinical signs, maybe variants in other related genes. But critically, a large portion of these mysteries have been attributed to cryptic variants within the FBN1 gene itself.
Okay, so we're on the trail of these hidden genetic culprits. But what exactly are we looking for when we talk about cryptic variants? It's not always the obvious large-scale DNA rearrangements that genome sequencing can sometimes pick up. This study zeroes in on something even more elusive, cryptic splice variants. The problem is these variants often lie far beyond the typical narrow regions of a gene that standard clinical tests even, well, bother to examine. They're in the so-called junk DNA that we often overlook, making them completely fly under the diagnostic radar.
Precisely. And this is why this research is so important. The study performed a really systematic assessment of genome sequence data from the 100,000 Genomes Project. They specifically focused on over 700 individuals diagnosed with familial thoracic aortic aneurysm disease, or FDA, which is a condition closely related to Marfan syndrome. Their aim was sort of twofold. Find new molecular diagnoses for these families, and at the same time, evaluate how powerful genome sequencing, combined with advanced computational splice prediction tools, could finally detect these hidden FBN1 variants.
This research leverages the massive 100,000 Genomes Project, the 100 Kilo GP. It's a nationwide UK initiative designed to uncover genetic bases of undiagnosed diseases. Can you speak to how the sheer scale of a project like 100 Kilo GP was absolutely essential for uncovering these cryptic variants? I mean, they might be extremely rare in the broader population, right?
Absolutely. The aggregated data from nearly 80,000 participants in the 100K GP was invaluable, just immense. To identify these truly rare cryptic variants, you really needed a vast data set to compare patients against. It ensures that what you find isn't just common variation. DNA samples underwent whole genome sequencing, generating these incredibly detailed reads of the entire genome, which were then aligned to the human reference genome, GRC 38. For the primary analysis, that systematically extracted and annotated what they called ultra-rare FBN1 variants. Basically, single nucleotide changes, SNVs, that appeared only once in the entire data set. They used a tool called the Variant Effect Predictor, VEP, and then, crucially, a sophisticated deep learning tool called Splice AI. Splice AI predicts the impact of these genetic changes on splicing. It gives scores from 0 to 1, indicating the likelihood of disrupting the process acceptor gain or loss, donor gain or loss. Their initial analysis focused on variants with Splice AI scores above 0.5, and to statistically assess if these variants were unusually enriched in FT8 cases, they used Fisher's exact test.
Okay, that's a powerful initial screen, but to truly cast a wide net, they didn't stop there, did they? What further steps did their analysis take to ensure they weren't missing anything, especially maybe more subtle variants?
No, they didn't stop. They dug even deeper with a secondary, more sensitive analysis. This included all the FT8 families from the 100 Keto GP, even those on slightly older genome builds, plus an additional family from NHS England's Genomic Medicine Service. For this phase, they relaxed the criteria a bit. They lowered the allele frequency threshold, allowing for slightly more common variants, though still rare, less than 0.0001. And importantly, they lowered the Splice AI threshold to 0.2. This expanded search allowed them to capture even more subtle variants that might have been initially overlooked. Now, identifying these variants computationally is one thing, but proving their actual impact on splicing, well, that's quite another. To validate these predictions, which is absolutely critical for clinical relevance, they employed several experimental steps. They tried RNA sequencing on blood samples, though honestly, coverage at the FBN1 locus was often sparse. The gene just isn't highly expressed in blood. Much more efficient and informative was targeted RNA analysis, primarily RT-PCR followed by Sanger sequencing. Even with low FBN1 expression, this proved highly effective. In some cases, they also used minigene constructs. These are artificial gene segments cloned into a vector to confirm at the predicted splice events in a controlled lab setting. That takes more resources, though.
Right. And to really solidify their findings, they performed a replication analysis using data from the UK Biobank, right? That's that massive population-based study of 500,000 participants. They looked at ICD-10 codes for aortic aneurysm and Marfan syndrome to see if their findings held true in a broader population context, connecting discoveries to real-world clinical data.
Correct. And throughout this, all identified variants were rigorously assessed using the 2015 American College of Medical Genetics and Genomics, or ACMG, framework. This standard framework, and importantly, supplemented with specific guidance from a specialized splicing subgroup, the CLIAN-SVI splicing subgroup, ensures consistent and high-quality interpretation. It moves them from just a genetic change to a clinically actionable finding.
So, after sifting through the DNA of nearly 80,000 individuals, including over 700 with this familial thoracic aortic aneurysm disease, what did they actually find? They identified almost 14,000 single nucleotide variants in the FBN1 gene, but the truly striking finding was how few, just 21 of them, actually showed a significant predicted impact on splicing using that refined Splice AI analysis. This initial rarity makes the next finding even more impactful, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Here's the bombshell. These previously hidden candidate splice variants, they were found 84 times more often in individuals recruited with familial thoracic aortic aneurysm disease compared to the non-FTAID participants. That's a staggering odds ratio of 84, with a p-value so small it's almost unimaginable, like 10 to the minus 14. This incredible enrichment finally solves why so many of these cases remained a frustrating mystery for years. It dramatically shifts our understanding of Marfan syndrome's genetic architecture.
Wow, 84 times. And as we mentioned, their more sensitive analysis, by casting an even wider net, really broadened the scope. By including all FTD families and relaxing that Splice AI threshold down to 0.2, an additional 14 families were identified. This brought the total to 20 unique FBN1 splice variants, impacting 32 individuals from 23 families. That's a significant number of previously unsolved cases now potentially solved.
It really is. And looking at the nature of these variants, they were found all over the FBN1 gene, from intron 1 right through to intron 63. But crucially, 70%, that's 14 out of 20 of these variants, lay beyond the typical EDIFI-8 base pair splice regions that are usually examined by standard tests. This definitively explains why they were missed by conventional testing. They just weren't looking there. The most common predicted consequence was something called pseudo-exonization, essentially creating a new unwanted chunk of genetic code, an exon, within an intron where it shouldn't be. That happened in 9 out of 20 variants. Almost as common was exon extension, where an existing exon was made longer, also seen in 9 out of 20. Both of these just wreak havoc on the final protein structure.
The experimental validation for these findings sounds incredibly rigorous. Were there any particular challenges in confirming these splice variants, especially given, you know, the low expression of FBN1 in blood samples? How did they overcome that?
That's an excellent point. Confirming the impact is absolutely crucial. You can't just rely on the prediction. Out of the 20 identified variants, 16 were experimentally confirmed to cause aberrant splicing using various RNA testing methods that includes 15 confirmations within this study and one previously reported. While yes, the RNA-seq data sometimes lacked sufficient coverage due to low FBN1 expression in blood, the targeted RT-PCR from blood samples proved to be highly effective for confirming these effects. Minigenes help too for specific cases, so this multi-pronged approach to validation really provides robust evidence. It wasn't just one method. They also made a critical discovery about how to interpret these splice AI scores. It wasn't just about the change from the delta score, but also the absolute score that indicates the pure strength of a predicted splicing event. Take family 23. A variant initially looked insignificant because its delta score was low, 0.20. But it actually had an incredibly high absolute donor gain score, 0.99. This subtle detail, looking at the absolute score, revealed a clear splice alteration that had been completely missed. It led to a confirmed 13 base pair exon extension and importantly corrected a previous likely benign classification for that variant in ClinVar, so this detail can prevent misdiagnoses.
Wow, okay. And these variants also showed a surprisingly diverse range of effects, didn't they? It wasn't all just loss of function. While most of them, 13 out of 20, did cause a predicted loss of function leading to, you know, truncated or non-existent proteins, some 7 out of 20 resulted in more subtle changes, things like in-frame insertions or deletions where the protein is altered but maybe not completely broken, or even impacts on the 5' untranslated region, the 5-UTR. For instance, in family 9, a variant in the 5-UTR extended exon 1x4 base pairs and created a new start codon. This upstream open reading frame, or URF, could significantly alter how much of the protein is actually made, or maybe even if it's made at all. Really subtle but potentially powerful effects.
That's exactly. And they also noted a recurrent variant, C.1589-1217GT. This one was found in 7 individuals from 4 apparently independent families across the UK. Despite having a relatively low splice AI score, its recurrence and the fact it was previously reported as causing a 202 base pair pseudoexon in a large Marfan pedigree confirmed its significance. Haplotype studies, which look at the genetic background around the variant, indicated these were likely independent mutations arising separately rather than spreading from a single common ancestor.
This research isn't just fascinating science. It has a truly transformative impact on clinical practice, doesn't it? It led to a likely genetic diagnosis for 32 individuals across 23 families. For many of these patients, you said, this is the end of a long diagnostic odyssey. They'd previously undergone extensive FBN1 testing using all sorts of established methods, older gene-specific tests like DHPLC and MLPA, broader NGS panels, even full clinical exome analysis. The key is, none of those methods were designed to look this deeply into the specific intronic regions where these cryptic variants hide. The diagnostic yield for these previously undiagnosed FDAID cases in the 100 kilogp was estimated at approximately 3%. Now, for families with strong clinical suspicion, that is a significant breakthrough. These newly identified variants were linked to a whole spectrum of Marfan syndrome features, from significant aortic root dilatation needing cardiac surgery, right down to the more common skeletal and ocular features. And as a result, many of these variants were reclassified under ACMG guidelines. 9 deemed pathogenic, 5 likely pathogenic, and 6 still classified as variants of uncertain significance, or VUS, but now with much better functional evidence.
That's right. And the UK biobank replication analysis provided crucial context here. While the very general aortic aneurysm and dissection cohort didn't show significant enrichment for FBN1 splice variants, the much more specific Marfan syndrome cohort, coded Q87.4, did show a highly significant enrichment. The odds ratio there was 167. This really underscores the critical importance of precise phenotypic classification when you're analyzing genetic data. It highlights that the more accurately you define the patient group, the clearer the genetic signal becomes. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, this study really conclusively shows that these non-canonical FBN1 splice variants are a recurrent and very likely underreported cause of Marfan syndrome. They contribute significantly to those previously unsolved cases that have left families in diagnostic limbo for years, finally providing answers and pathways to better care.
And that 3% diagnostic yield for previously undiagnosed cases. It might not sound huge on its own, but it's actually substantial, isn't it? Especially when you consider that these families often have a strong suspicion of a single gene disorder because of their family history and clinical presentation. For them, getting that definitive genetic answer changes everything, not just for the diagnosis itself, but for guiding medical management, maybe family planning, and informing at-risk relatives.
Absolutely. And this raises an important question regarding current diagnostic guidelines. The study proposes clarifying the ACM gene PVS1 criterion that's pathogenic, very strong evidence specifically for splice impacting variants. They recommend that variants proven by cDNA analysis, so RNA evidence, to introduce these unwanted cryptic sequences or to delete critical protein segments in frame should be classified as PVS1 strong. This would more accurately reflect their definitive impact on protein function and hopefully streamline variant classification, making it easier and more consistent for labs to interpret.
This really highlights the vital role of RNA testing then. Genome sequencing is brilliant at identifying candidate variants, but that confirmatory RNA testing seems absolutely critical for proving pathogenicity. Why is that still so essential for clinical action, especially for genes like FBN1 that have low expression in easily accessible tissues like blood?
It's because the in silico prediction, the computational prediction, while incredibly powerful now, is still just that, a prediction. The RNA testing provides the direct biological evidence that the variant actually disrupts splicing in the patient's cells. This proof is crucial for guiding clinical management decisions, things like surgery timing or medication, and for accurate cascade testing of at-risk relatives. You need that certainty. What's fascinating here, though, is the evolution of splice prediction tools. The study acknowledges the vast improvements in algorithms like Splice AI. I mean, in this research, the computational predictions were correct in all 16 experimentally confirmed cases. That's a stark contrast to older studies where computational tools often fell short. It suggests that these tools are becoming reliable enough to effectively scan these large intronic regions, which is a huge leap forward for diagnosis.
So what does this all mean for the future, then? The ability to detect these cryptic variants fundamentally means that genome sequencing looks increasingly like an appropriate first-line test for families with suspected Marfan syndrome who lack a clear diagnosis. However, for this increased diagnostic yield to be fully realized in practice, there must be a corresponding increase in the capacity for RNA splicing analysis within clinical laboratories, right? That seems like the next big hurdle in bringing these breakthroughs to every patient who needs them.
That's exactly right. Capacity for that validation step is key. So to summarize, cryptic splice variants in the FBN1 gene are a significant and often overlooked cause of Marfan syndrome and related aortic diseases. This study beautifully demonstrates how advanced genomic sequencing, combined with refined computational prediction tools and crucially essential RNA validation, can unlock these previously hidden genetic diagnoses, offering clear answers to families who've been searching, sometimes for years.
What does this profound understanding of hidden genetic changes mean for how we approach diagnosing and managing other complex genetic conditions, truly pushing the boundaries of personalized genomic medicine? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you found this analysis valuable, the best way to support Base by Base is to hit follow on Spotify and leave a 5-star rating. It takes only a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.